Welcome to Wisdom Rebellion, where we are figuring out how to improve our health, relationships, and family life with the help of the world's leading experts in how we get there, one challenging conversation at a time. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Wendy Charles Warner, who is a published independent academic researcher and educator with a specialist interest in the field of home education. She's been involved with home education practice and assessment of a role for in excess of 40 years. In the last 13 years, this has included advising individuals, local authorities, NGOs, and governments in respect of home education. Wendy is regularly asked to contribute to articles and debates and has given oral evidence to the Education Select Committee on Home Education. She is a co-chair of Education Otherwise, and she provides well-received professional development courses to public bodies. We discussed why parents choose to homeschool, what homeschooling looks like in a daily life, and how it fits with parents' careers. We also talked about the impact of COVID on homeschooling, balancing offline and online education, as well as the future of our modern education system that is increasingly outdated and not fit for purpose. Enjoy. Why are parents choosing to homeschool their children?
Gosh, that's a very wide question. And it actually goes back historically. When I first started home educating my very first home educated child, about 97-98% of parents chose home education as a lifestyle choice. And it was really rare for a parent to come to it for any other reason. Then if we move forward, we have an increasing dissatisfaction with the school system. And say 10-15 years ago, maybe about 10-15% of parents were choosing home education because they were unhappy with the school style of education. They were unhappy with the provision for their individual child. My most recent research, which was in late 2023, shows me that parents coming new to home education within that year had chosen it in 47% of cases. The parent had chosen home education because the school was not meeting their child's special needs, the school was not supporting their child's medical needs, specifically the school was not meeting their child's mental health needs. So in recent times, parents coming new to home education are much more likely to do so because of very serious dissatisfaction with school provision.
When you are talking about special needs, are we talking about special needs as most parents would probably associate it with things like autism, perhaps ADHD, Asperger's disorder? Are we talking those special needs?
Yes, special needs is it encompasses rather more. It can encompass physical disability. For example, a child might be blind or deaf, but primarily people who are choosing home education, those parents who are choosing it because of what they consider to be their child's unmet special needs, are parents of children with autism, Asperger's, processing disorder, things like complex special needs, where the child is physically and psychologically needs. Parents perhaps have children who are unable to communicate. We have mutism is not unknown, particularly in autistic children. And special schools are oversubscribed and underperforming.
Okay, so when you say underperforming, what is the cause of underperformance? Is it just that naturally special needs children have got higher requirements of like adult input into their education? So the ratios that are normally achieved in your standard school just can't be easily provided?
It's partly that, but another aspect of it is when you actually analyse the data for children who have special needs, who are coming new to home education, they tend to be older children. They tend to be, fewer of them tend to be primary age children. They tend to be senior school children, including in what are known in school as years 9, 10 and 11. And what we find happening is that in the early years, children might get the one-to-one that their EHCP actually suggests that they need. But as the child gets older, there appears to be an assumption within the system that they grow out of those needs and that they can cope, and therefore they don't need the one-to-one. And it's a bit like saying to a person with no legs, okay, now you're older, you can walk. Disabilities do not go away. People don't grow out of them. They might develop coping skills, but those coping skills don't necessarily translate into being able to cope within a classroom. And so you do find a reduction in support for children with SEN in older years. You've also got a school system which is broken in many ways. The government makes greater demands on schools to provide greater care. We've now got schools being expected essentially to parent children within the school days and sometimes outside school. And yet the schools are provided with greater resources. There is a shortage of trained teachers in schools because a lot of teachers have left the profession due to dissatisfaction. And if I can give you an example of a special needs boy who I'm aware of, who was taken out of the school system. He was taken out of the school system as a teenager, never having spoken a word within the he was having speech therapy purportedly within school, but he did not speak a word. And his mother had been told not to do the training at home because it would conflict with school. She decided that her child was being failed and she took him out of school. And within 3 months, he said his first word. He said, "Mama, this is a child who had never spoken before." And after nearly, it must have been 7 years in the education system, with purportedly having speech therapy, the child could not speak a word. Yet when his mum decided that she was going to be his teacher, that child started to speak. It's very telling.
Do we know the split in homeschooling community, if you like, between children with special needs and perhaps children whose parents just decided that for whatever reason they want to take the responsibility for educating their children? What is that split?
Just to be clear, legally the parent always has responsibility for the child's education, even if they send the child to school. The parent remains responsible. It's just how they discharge that responsibility. If I look back at the data in 2022, we were roughly at 18% had withdrawn the child for some form of special need. Roughly the same amount had withdrawn the child because the child had unmet mental health problems, concerns about bullying, or that sort of thing. And the lifestyle choice parents who felt that they could do a better job, essentially, we're around the 35% mark. If we factor in parents coming new to home education, and remember that there is what local authorities call churn, as parents are coming in, so other children are leaving because they age out or perhaps they go into the school system. So if we factor in those parents, those figures increase dramatically. And as I say, new parents in the last year, 47% had special needs. There is also a socioeconomic split. And that's really, really interesting because home education can be difficult. A lot of parents have to work, so making that decision can be tough. And so we see a socioeconomic split. We have approximately half of the parents home educating are on means-tested benefits. They're on very low incomes or means-tested benefits. And then you get a gap where you have very, very few home educating parents. And then you get the other half who are fairly well-to-do, higher than average income parents. So it seems to be that those parents on middle incomes, ordinary everyday parents, find it harder to actually commit the whole of one parent's time to educating the child because financial pressures mean that they have to go out to work. Looking at the statistics, it's very clear to me that if those parents could, a lot of them would be home educating their children.
Okay, this is really interesting. This is actually definitely something that I wanted to ask you about. I just want to backtrack a little bit because I was looking into various ways of schooling. I've got a boy that is just over 2 years old. And I think for me, it's not the special needs that is potentially driving at looking at alternatives. It's my raising concern about what we are seeing in the normal schools and the cultural changes, the pushing certain political narratives that have to be taught to children. It's that is something that I just don't agree with. So for me, when I started looking at it, I definitely came across certain products, let's call them, or services, where you've essentially got an online school. So I'm trying to essentially define what a homeschooling actually is, because when you start looking into it, you seem to have an array of options that start at parents homeschooling almost the DIY and just teach the children what they think is the best for that child, perhaps follow the child's passion and really narrow down on that specific skill. You then sort of start going through places and organizations that give you materials to go through with your child. You then have got these online schools that certainly do a very good job selling their services, and then all the way into the normal school. So when we are talking about homeschooling, what are we talking about?
Okay. If the child is in a school, either an independent school or a state school, then the parent discharges their duty by sending their child to school. If the parent doesn't do that, what the law says is that they must provide an education which is suitable to the child's age, ability, aptitude, and any special needs the child may have. However, that is a much bigger ask than the schools are asked for, because the school doesn't need to give an individualized education to the child. A parent has to. But whilst it's a bigger ask, it also gives the parent complete freedom to provide the education which they feel is most suitable to their child. They choose how the child is educated. And in my experience, parents generally start home educating. About 90% come straight from the school system. They don't start from the beginning. And they start home educating thinking, we have got to essentially reproduce school at home. And within about 3 months, they're no longer doing that. And that is because schools do school better than school. And parents find that school doesn't actually work at home as they thought it would. And they adapt to their children. And you get a range of ways that parents approach home education. And it is a really wide range. You can start from that reproduction of school at home, which can include registering the child at an online school. And some of them are better than others, just as with any other provision. You register the child at the online school, and your job is to just make sure the child undertakes their learning. You can then go to the very other opposite, which is what people refer to as unschooling. And unschooling, done well, can actually work miracles with children's education. And it's the most difficult form of home education to do, because the child is educated without realizing they're actually being educated. And the parent does it by simply exposing the child to significant opportunity, taking the parent into the community, the child becomes of the community, they strew materials, they provide lots and lots of opportunity for learning. And it isn't a reneging of responsibility. It's a huge responsibility, because the parent has got to stimulate that child's interest consistently and full time. So those are the different ends of the spectrum. And in between that, we often say every home educator has a different form of home education. But some of the most popular choices are topic-based. So the child will, for example, start a topic. And one very, very good example I'm aware of is a parent whose child decided she wanted to learn about Egypt. Now, children in school learn about Egypt. They might learn about Tutankhamun, the pyramids, even what the Egyptians wore. But this child didn't want to just learn that. She was fully absorbed with her topic. She made Egyptian clothing. She learned about Egyptian food and made Egyptian food. She studied the difference between the ancient and the modern Egyptians. She made a replica scale model from scratch, making the little bricks of a pyramid herself, calculating it. And then, in addition to that, she programmed her computer to do some hieroglyphics, completely above my pay grade. But what that child had done, she'd followed an interest in Egypt. And in doing so, she'd learned about biology, environmental sciences, maths, literacy, geography, technology. Every subject came from that. And I say to people, pick up the nearest object. Here on my desk, my nearest object. That's a little bear, and it's made of basalt, which is an igneous rock. I could provide a child's full education from that single object. And so can a parent, because each thing you learn leads to another one. And that's how topic-based learning works. And that child moved on to polar bears after that. You've also got seasonal learning. Seasonal learning is essentially during the nice weather, the parents travel around the country, go to different places of interest, learn from the world outside. And when the weather becomes less pleasant, they decamp to their house, probably to a room where they sit and do more written work, more reading, more traditional schoolwork. But then when the sun comes out, off they go again. Autonomous learning is very popular. And all that means is that the child has choice. And probably the most popular form of that is that the child has some structure for maths and English, usually, possibly science, and the rest of the learning is the child's choice. So the child will say what they want to do. My children were autonomously educated, but that doesn't mean to say that they were unschooled. What it means is they chose what they wanted to learn and when they learned it. And one very good example is a grandchild who I home educated, who loved structure, and I would be given a time when I was to be available and told what I was to help him to learn. And he would turn up, and then he might just say, "The sun's shining, Grandma, I want to go flying. Can you take me to the airfield?" And my job was to ring the airfield, check that a plane was available, and drive him there to go flying. And off he'd go in his plane. And not many children go flying, but they might go to the park to see the squirrels or go swimming or just go out to play. But they are choosing when they are learning what. So that's autonomous. You've also got sort of the very structured, semi-structured, a mix of things. World schooling is aspirational. And that is, the parent travels around to different countries with the child, and the child becomes of the community within that country, learning from that community, and then they move on to somewhere else. And some parents will do that within the UK or within America or wherever they live, moving around different areas, moving and learning and being of different communities. I actually grew up in a world schooling manner, and it gives you a very wide outlook. It makes you very open-minded. It makes you want to learn and really interested. So that those are some of the types, but give me 50 parents and you'll find 50 types of home education.
That makes sense. Let's go back to the social economic application, or perhaps social economic split between the homeschooling, because what you've essentially described is a bell curve, right? We've got the least amount of population percentage wise on each end, so either very wealthy or not so wealthy, and then probably the biggest curve on the bell, essentially, where you've got your middle classes, majority of the population. So do we know actually what is causing for the people on each side of the spectrum to be homeschooling?
Yes. The pressures are different at different ends. Quite often, it's really interesting, because the normal curve, you've got a normal distribution. The majority of people fall into the middle, whereas in home education, it's completely the reverse. And what we are seeing is that this is very, very often financially based. The parents who are means-tested benefits, and this is quite often parents of special needs children, because they need to be at home caring for the child, they cannot work. So very often they're on means-tested benefits simply because their child needs so much of their commitment. And they really have no choice to go into the world of work. And they are committing to their children in a lot of different ways. But because they have that cushion of means-tested benefits, although it's quite a difficult amount of money to live on, it means that they are secure in their ability to home educate their child, because they know that they can survive on that income. And they're often parents who have to be really inventive about how they home educate, because they don't have the resources to buy in education. You then have the higher earners who have the resources to buy in education. They tend to be more likely to buy in a program, or to pay for tutors, or to perhaps go to, they'll choose the theater rather than the park. They'll choose their child to have visits abroad to see something they want to learn about, rather than looking it up online, because they've got the resources to do so. And they're often families where two-parent families are more common in that cohort, and one parent gives up work in order to home educate the child, or both parents perhaps go part-time. So you then have the cohort in the middle, which would normally be your largest cohort, are those parents who don't have the cushion of means-tested benefits. And very often, the means-tested benefit level is not a high income. So these are often not very high income parents. They're just ordinary mums and dads. They're trying to pay their rent and pay their mortgage. Their bills have gone up. They're managing. They're keeping their heads above water, but there's nothing to spare. And those parents really cannot afford for one parent to give up work, or if they're a single parent, for them to give up work, because if they did, they could not pay their basic bills. And so there is a financial restriction on the ability of parents to home educate. And what you find when they do is they become incredibly resourceful. So mums might, for example, work from home, creating employment for themselves. One mum I know who home educates 8 children, is actually a qualified pediatric physiotherapist. And she's had to reinvent herself doing another role within physiotherapy that she can do at evenings and weekends with independent clients rather than working in the NHS, so that she can educate her children all week. She works all weekend, and I haven't figured out yet when she sleeps. But parents adjust their lifestyles to accommodate their children's education. And as I say, home educating 8 children and working to earn your living, it's just, some of these mums and dads just absolutely amaze me.
I mean, it seems almost impossible to someone that, you know, hasn't done it, or perhaps, you know, their normal routine is to, you know, drop off the kids to nursery or school or whatever, and then sort of go out to earn their living, whether it's part-time, full-time, or whatever setup they've got.
It's actually really interesting, because during COVID, parents dipped their toes into the water. A lot of those mums and dads who would never have considered home education felt that they were doing something similar. And we had a big rise suddenly in home education. And a lot of that has dropped off when parents have sort of thought it's got a bit much and they're not coping as well as they thought. But we've retained some of those COVID home educators who only really came to it because they found out actually it was realistic to do it during COVID.
Let's dive into COVID, because it was a very interesting experiment, I suppose, because suddenly, not by choice, but all children were homeschooled, or almost all children were homeschooled, and the parents went seemingly overnight from one lifestyle to having to adapt to another lifestyle. So have you found something surprising in the data of homeschooling, like during the pandemic and then after the pandemic?
Yes, the parents often felt that they were home educating, but in fact they were COVID schooling, because they were being provided with the educational materials from the school. And most parents were simply doing whatever the school told them to do. But some parents became slightly renegade and decided to home educate themselves. And those are the ones who came to home education. But the ones who received slightly wrong impression, we suddenly started getting parents saying to us, well, I'm home educating. Who's going to send me the material? Who's going to give me the information I need to home educate my child? And there was an increase in lack of understanding of what home education is. And the media didn't help, because the media was describing lockdown schooling as home education, which of course it wasn't. It was a halfway house. And parents coming to home education, we're now seeing a lot more who are doing so, and they feel aggrieved at the lack of provision for home educators. So when I started, we were a rather, shall we say, feisty group whose attitude was, this is down to us, we're going to do it, keep your nose up, nothing to do with you. This is in our hands, we are taking charge and we're going for it. And now we're seeing a much higher level of parents saying, well, actually, I'd like some help. I'd like some support. What can you do to help me to do this? Instead of those of us who were lifestyle choice home educators historically, who just felt it was nobody's business but our own. So we have seen a change in the cohort, a very interesting change, which it's quite alien to me as a very old home educator in person. But of course, I'm very familiar with it because of the work I do with home education.
You mentioned provisions for home educating. So does the government or schools, for example, provide any provisions? Or if they do, what provisions are being provided to parents? Or is it very much, if you want to do it on your own, you are on your own?
Yes, that's precisely it. Lockdown and COVID actually benefited all home educating families. Because prior to that, most things, when I started home educating, there was no internet. Everything had to be created by the parent. We're talking about 40 years ago. The parent had to design and create everything. As the internet has developed, so we have seen the development of online provision. And you've got hundreds of online providers, each of them trying to sell their wares, some good, some not so good, most of them somewhere in the middle, but most of them charging a fee. And when lockdown happened, shortly before lockdown happened, the Welsh government had designed what it called the Hub to provide free lessons, but it was quite small scale. And then lockdown hit, and the government promoted, encouraged, and initially funded the development of an online school which parents could access, Oak National Academy. And when lockdown ended, that carried on without the government support. It's carried on as an institution, really. And a lot of parents are now using those sorts of free facilities. We've also had the development of BBC Bite Size, which is free. We've got Khan Academy, which is free. We've got quite a few providers who are giving some free access to parents. So unlike me, when I started, if I wanted to teach my child a certain mathematical formula that I knew nothing about, I had to go to the library and look it up. Nowadays, bang, there it is. Oh, there's a video that shows you how. And it's so much easier. But it's also lost some of that personal touch. And I much preferred how I did it. And in fact, I home educated children right through to about 8 or 9 years ago, I finished home educating the last child, but I still support my grandchildren's education, and their input from me is quite heavy. And it is very much geared to personal conversation, explanation, drawing things out for them, rather than here's a video, let's look at it. And modern day parents are very much geared to, oh, let's Google it, let's get a video. It's funny to me because I'm much older.
I think there is always this challenging balance to strike between using enough technology to really make the most out of the learning opportunities and the potential against leaning on it too heavily for convenience reasons, essentially. But it is interesting because some of these softwares that you mentioned, I think specifically Khan Academy, that's the one that teaches maths. It's heavy on maths, isn't it? Bjorn Lomborg, in his books about, like, you know, what you can invest in the least amount of money to give you the most bucks on the other end in terms of the outcomes, he actually talks about using tablets in schools, especially in, for example, the third world countries. But he also said that it also applies to the West, because what essentially happens is these softwares have got the computation capability that we humans just don't have, and it can individualize the difficulty for that specific child, and it can keep giving that child tasks that are at optimal level for learning. And he basically said that from the research that they've done, using that tablet for an hour a day gives children 3 years worth of education instead of just 1 year. So they essentially learn at treble the speed that they would be learning just relying on the teachers. And I mean, we obviously've got the fact that a teacher with a class of 20 kids, even with the class of 10 kids, they have to take the median approach. They can't focus on the children that are a little bit slower or the children that are faster. So it seems to be that it's those kids, again, at the ends of the distribution that are not getting the education that they need just simply because there is no such thing as individualized learning in scaled operation or scaled education.
With the best will in the world, if you've got a 30-minute lesson and you've got 30 children, that's 1 minute per child, even if all of the children are of a level and their behavior is fine. You can't provide the same. And in fact, an awful lot of independent schools in this country, particularly prep school, junior school level, use programs in order to boost the children's learning. So the child uses Mathletics is a popular one in prep schools, to give an example. So they do have their place, but for me, they have very limited place because my brain works in the same way. And so when I'm educating a child, their feedback to me is directing where I go. And I think putting that into an algorithm works for most people. If you happen to have a strange brain as mine is, it just doesn't work for me. But I don't suggest that parents shouldn't use any digital learning, but I think that you have to balance it. And some of the most precious learning to children, sitting and reading in a book that a squirrel is a grey furry creature or a golden furry creature with a curly tail who climbs up trees and eats nuts gives you no sense of what one is. But going outside and seeing it, perhaps finding a dead one and holding it, perhaps dissecting it, perhaps sitting in a park for an hour and just feeding it walnuts and it coming up to you, that child never forgets what they've learned. So exposing the child to real life experiences, to practical hands-on learning, to me is one of the huge benefits of home education. And I referred in passing to my grandson going flying. Going flying sounds like great fun, but in order to go flying, he had to understand wind speed, tilt of the aircraft, the physics of the aircraft, the lift, his own bodily physiology and how it responded. He had to understand air law. He had to understand radio procedure. All of the things that you have to know to pilot an aircraft, which are practical skills that you take forward in life. And this is a child who qualified to fly before he passed his driving test, but he passed his driving test very readily because that skill set was ingrained. And the same is with the child who goes to the park to study the squirrel. Because if that child, as they're getting older, wants perhaps to work with animals, they've gained an understanding of the need to be calm, the need to understand the animal's diet, how the animal moves, how it relates to you as a human, and they have transferable skills. So I think that using technology is really good in its place, but you do have to expose the child to the world and what it has to offer.
So how, for example, would you guide the parents that are perhaps not experienced in homeschooling yet? How to strike that balance? Because there is so much, again, between being reliant very little on technology and again, very heavily on technology. And I think most parents are really becoming switched on the screen time, excessive screen time especially, is not ideal for kids. So talking about balances, Do we have any data that actually tells us where that balance is?
That's outside my specific remit, because the studies that exist are mainly studies of children in the third world or children within schools. There are no specific studies of home-educated children. But my advice to parents is very, very simple. Listen to your child, speak to your child, observe your child, trust your instincts and trust your child. That if you're finding that your child, for example, let's go back to Egypt. Your child wants to learn about Egypt. They're looking things up on a screen. And they perhaps spent an hour looking things up on a screen. In the meantime, the mum or dad might have found some fabric or perhaps ordered some fabric and direct the child to something more practical. Talk to the child, because what an awful lot of parents aren't doing as much as they did in my generation is talking to their children and listening to their children. We're all too heavily engaged with screens. The children have their heads in their device. The parents are on their phones. And you see it with parents with pushchairs or prams, pushing the baby, facing away from them, and they're on the phone. When I was a mother, a young mother, all pushchairs and prams faced towards you, and the mother walked along, talking to the child. And children have lost that. So regarner that communication and develop periods of time when you are talking to the child and discussing what they're learning, because in that way you can learn from your child how much one-to-one, how much individual time and how much screen time is working for them. So trust your instincts, because parents have good instincts when they stop listening to retailers selling them goods. Trust your instincts.
Okay, so let's talk about academic achievements. What I'm trying to distill over here is we've got different types of skill sets. There are practical skill sets and more academic lenient skills. So let's just focus on the academic skills right now. Am I right in assuming that the kids that are homeschooled are still taking the national tests of competency, such as SATs, GCSEs? Do they still take those tests to check their knowledge? No.
No. SATs are not relevant to home education. SATs weren't designed for the child's benefit. They were designed to ascertain whether or not the school was delivering their education program as expected. Home-educated children do not take SATs. Home-educated children do not have to take GCSE or A-level or any other exams, but they can choose to do so if they wish to. And you get a split in how children actually finish their education. You get the child whose ambitions or interests are geared more toward academic life. And those children will generally take GCSEs, A-levels, or other exams. You get the children whose interests are geared more to other things. So, for example, you have a high proportion of self-motivated entrepreneurial children within the world of home education. Because to come to home education, the parent has to be fairly independently minded. And therefore, they tend to have children who are slightly more independently minded, because they have strong skills in that area. And those children will often develop their businesses quite young within their education. One child I'm aware of started developing their cake business aged about 7. The child is now in their early teens and is making about £1,000 a year from their cake business, but has learned, it's a little part-time thing, but has learned how to develop a business from that. I'm aware of home-educated children who are software developers, all manner of things. One boy who could not read and write, and went off following his instincts, learning to whittle and carve and to use his hands with tools. He's now an internationally renowned woodworker. He makes art and craft of furniture from wood, and he is in demand and earns a very nice living. So in home education, in school, every child has to sit a set amount of GCSEs, and the impression is given that your life is ruined if you don't get them. Whereas in fact, in home education, children are guided toward what is right for them. So if the child's ambition is to become a hairdresser, they don't need to sit physics GCSE or geography necessarily. If they want to, they can. But they might instead do courses on hairdressing or the chemicals involved in dyes and things like that. And that's really common with home-educated children who are less interested in the academic side. On the other hand, you get those children who are highly academic, who do take GCSEs and exams, and in fact, it's not common, but it's also not rare for them to take degree courses very young. One of my own got a first-class honours degree age 15. One of my children who I home-educated did GCSEs at age about 11 or 12, A-levels at 14 or 15, and then decided to do a photography course, a creative writing course. She learned car mechanics. And then when she was about 16, she decided she was going to do something. She trained as a riding instructor. She then decided that she ought to go to university, so she'd take a few A-levels through. She actually went to grammar school for a year to do them. And she went to university and is now a professional woman in a very highly academic field. But that was because that was what was right for her. And another of my children, my grandchildren, who I did some home education with, she did some school but some home education, has a business which she set up herself, creating cosmetics, and she makes her living from her own business. She wasn't ever going to be an academic success, but she's certainly a success as a person, because she's living a productive life where she's independent and where she's happy. So it's about what is right for the child. If you have a five-year-old, when your little child, who's now two, is five, if they suddenly decide their ambition is to be a tractor driver, your education at that point should be geared toward helping that child to be a tractor driver. 1 month later, that child will probably want to be a cat. And your education at that point will probably change to being all about cats. I have a grandson who was a cat for about a year and a half, 2 years. He spoke cat. What he doesn't know about cats isn't worth knowing. And he tipped the cat, he wore cat outfits, he spoke cat, and getting any sense out of him in anything but cat language was really difficult. But he became very knowledgeable. And then he became obsessed with roller coasters. So the ideal education for a child might change as the child's interests and ambitions change. The five-year-old who wanted to be a tractor driver might just, when they're 17 or 18, become a farm worker. But they might also turn out to be a lecturer in neurosciences. And you'll find out along the way. And parents who home educate have to be incredibly adaptable. It's great fun.
I definitely get the sense of adventure, because the one thing that I'm noticing now in schools, and certainly looking at myself, I'm in my sort of later 30s, my interests over time really changed. And if I just focused on what I thought I wanted to do when I was 16, 14, when I really started choosing the tilt of my education within the secondary school, you are clueless quite often at that time what you want to do. And I think especially if you are getting your normal education, when they are essentially trying to give you a certain level of education in most topics, it's a very general, widespread education. Quite often, you haven't actually found just the thing that you want to focus on. And I think the way that we structure our entire education is starting to become outdated, not just because of the pace of change of technology and how quickly perhaps sitting behind a desk for 7 hours is not really what's required or even the best for that child in the modern environment, but also trying to teach children the tools for the world that we still don't understand with the pace of change, using the tools from 100 years ago or 70 years ago. It's exactly that gap that I think is starting to open up in a lot of changes.
And I think you're right. And that lifestyle education, people who choose home education as a lifestyle choice, it's very often because they recognize that. The school system is outdated, and those who are in charge of delivering it, producing it, rather than trying to turn it upside down, are actually just trying to tweak what they've got. And really, you can't do that. You've got to overhaul it. I was listening to a program on the radio the other day when a particularly amusing former minister was on the program. And she isn't deliberately amusing, but she does make me laugh because she says things that are so obvious and people are shocked by it. And her comment was, the NHS isn't working. We cannot keep trying to stick a plaster on it. We've got to have conversations about pulling it apart completely and rebuilding it. We've got to have conversations about changing it radically. And the same applies to our education system. We've got to have these conversations, but people are scared of change and they don't do it. And you've got a cohort of home educators who are actually leading the charge toward change. Children don't necessarily, I don't know anybody who wants to sit at a desk being spoon-fed information for several hours a day with the people of exactly the same age as them. And people are discovering forest schools, they're discovering different forms of education, and home education is really leading that drive because parents are recognizing that the school system is no longer fit for purpose. And it isn't. It isn't. When I went to school, and I still haven't decided what I want to be when I grow up, and I'm a great grandmother, when I went to school, there was nothing that geared me toward my natural talent. My natural talent is the law. I love the law. I absolutely love working within the law. But when I was at school, there was nothing to support me in a career in the law. Girls did not have professional careers when I was a child. I wasn't allowed to learn chemistry or physics. Had I been, I might have become a chemist or a physicist, but girls weren't allowed to. And that changed shortly after I left school. But it left me. I left school not knowing what I wanted to do when I grew up. And I did lots of different things. Over my life, I've done an awful lot of different things in different ways, often voluntary. And I have this background of having worked in the law for many years. But at the same time, I retrained as this, or I qualified as that. And it's because I've always had a sense of never quite knowing what I want to do when I grow up. And our children are not in schools and not given the tools to know what they want because they don't have exposure to everything they could have at that time. And as you say, when you left school, the world was a very different place to the world you're in now. Our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren aren't going to be living in the world we're living in now. Their world is going to be very different. How can we possibly say that this rigid system of sit at your desk and be fed information is going to equip them? In very basic terms, our national curriculum was designed for an economy which was based on manufacture. It was based in a manufacturing economy. We are now a service economy. We are no longer a manufacturing economy. And yet we're still trying to teach children to be part of a manufacturing economy.
I've heard that the setup of the school where you've got all the kids at the back of the class looking at one teacher, the regimented sort of way, the bell ringing, telling kids what to do, all that actually came from how factories used to be run, and currently it's all being sort of just put into school. We now know that structurally there are issues within the education. There is a gentleman called Richard Reeves, and he wrote a book called Of Boys and Men. And he goes as far as suggesting that boys should be starting their education a year later than the girls, simply because their brains are maturing at a different speed, which basically means that when they go into school, which is mainly female, they are labeled and quite often misunderstood as being particularly disruptive. It's not necessarily because they are disruptive, but young boys, for them, sitting behind a desk for 7 hours a day, from the energy point of view that they've got to burn, it's almost impossible and stay focused. And then because of their slightly delayed or different path of brain development, they simply don't have capability. So we seem to, within our education system, we seem to have a system that is an old system that we've sort of try and patch up. But as we do that, it's not fit for purpose for many, and many kids fall in between the gaps. Is there anyone in government actually looking at overhauling the education? Are there any experts out there that know what they're doing, trying to overhaul education? Or is it just largely due to the market forces, where you've got forest schools and alternatives coming to the market?
It's market forces, basically, and academics. We have quite a few academics trying to get across to government the fact that the system needs to change. But having observed government over the last 40 years in connection with alternative education, the more laissez-faire approach, the more that parents come to home education and other forms of alternative education, the more they seem to dig their heels in and become more restrictive and to try to gain more oversight. There appears to be a fear of change. There is no appetite within government to overhaul a system. There is a recognition that it's not working, but we tend to have a blame culture. Well, it's not working because parents aren't getting their children to school regularly. It's not working because of absenteeism. It's not working because parents just aren't parenting their children well, so they become school unable to learn. It's never not working because the system is not fit for purpose. And so what's happening in practice is, within academia and within the real world amongst the public, there's increasing recognition of the need for change. But within government, there is increasing resistance to anything different, which translates into desire for increasing regulation. You can see that within the calls for regulation of home education. And these calls initiated in older statesmen, elderly members of the House of Commons and the House of Lords, outraged that parents should be making these decisions themselves, and demanding that parents should have checks in their homes. In Wales, we actually have an education minister who has You cannot change law with guidance, but nonetheless, he's published guidance saying that local authorities should insist on seeing a child in their home to ensure that the education is suitable. And this is a minister who publicly states that as far as he's concerned, every child is better off in school. And yet, Welsh schools perform less well than any schools than schools do in Northern Ireland, Scotland, or England. Overall, the UK, if you look at PISA tables, which assess performance at age 15 to 16 internationally, the UK is one of the lowest performers in Europe. We have among the youngest school start age in Europe. We have the most strict system in Europe, but one of the most strict systems in Europe. And we have the least good performance in Europe. So, for example, we're telling our children to pick up a pen and start writing. We used to do that at about 5 or 6. We're now doing it at 3 or 4. We're putting children in school at 3 or 4 years old and asking them to pick up a pen and start writing. And I'm seeing court cases where one parent is arguing, my child's behind, he mustn't be home educated because he's 4 years old and he can't write, or he's 6 years old and he's not reading and writing. And yet a child's hand development physically is not ready to write until they're about 7 years old. Now, in the rest of Europe, children often don't start school until they're 6 or 7 years old, when they're more ready to actually learn those skills. And yet those countries have got higher performance amongst their young people leaving school. I don't understand why the government does not recognize that and is concentrated on getting children into school. We must ensure 100% attendance. It's just illogical, but I'm just one human and mm-hmm. it needs thousands of us to say it.
Okay, so just really quickly, if, for example, parents want to start homeschooling, how do they even do that? If the child, for example, hasn't started school, or if they're already in school, but the parent is concerned that it's not right for them.
That's very simple. If the child has never started school, you start home educating them. By home educating them, you just home educate them. You don't have to notify anybody. If you get an invitation to enroll your child in school, you simply don't enroll your child in school. You are a home educator. You don't have to ask permission. You don't have to tell anyone. If you have enrolled your child in school and it's a mainstream school, then all you have to do is give a notice to the school saying, please roll over my child from the roll with immediate effect because he or she is now home educated. The child then immediately is legally a home educated child. If the child has an education, health and care plan, or in Wales has additional learning needs with an independent learning plan, it's exactly the same in a mainstream school. If the child is in a special school, by arrangement with the local authority, the parent must ask the local authority for consent to remove the child from the school roll. It's not consent to home educate, it's consent to remove the child. And that consent must not be unreasonably withheld. If the child is in an independent school, then the child can be removed. You could decide today and remove the child today, but you have contractual obligations, which mean that you have financial liability. So the parent has to give notice to the school. The parent can remove the child, but the parent has to give written notice to the school of the end of their contract. Say, for example, now we're partway through a term, the parent can either leave the child in the school to work out the notice, or they can withdraw the child and pay the notice to the school. So the school will charge you for the contractual term, which is usually one full term. So halfway through a term, you would have to pay the following term. And if it's in the school holidays, you would only pay the following term. So that's the only difference with independent school. If the child is in an independent special school arranged by the parent, it's exactly the same as any other independent school. I hope that made sense.
No, it's fascinating, and I can appreciate that there is so much more to learn, and I'm conscious of the time that we've got over here. So for the people that want to find more about education otherwise and the work that you do, where can they find you online and how you can help them?
EducationOtherwise.org is our website. We have hundreds and hundreds of resources. We have fact sheets, frequently asked questions, information for parents in all sorts of circumstances. If what the parent needs to ask isn't there, or their case is a bit different, they can email us at enquiries@educationotherwise.org, or they can call us on 0300 124 5690. We're also on Facebook, Education Otherwise. And as we say, we are the home education charity. So if you contact us, the service is professional. We are subject to data protection, so your data is confidential. And we will never, ever say that a question is a stupid question. There is no such thing. If you've got a question, we're there to help you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for tuning in to Wisdom Rebellion. Come and join the conversation on our YouTube channel and socials. The links are in the show notes. And don't forget to follow, rate, and subscribe to the show so we can all build a wiser world together.